It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Monday the 3rd. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. It's been a big fall season for data. Hackers have been stealing it, phone companies are sneaking in charges for it, and consumers are trying to keep it private. So here's a question. Could you live a day without generating it? Like, any of it? Well, our friend at the BBC, Rory Ketlin-Jones, tried mightily and has some stories to tell. Rory, how'd it go?
It was hard, I can tell you. Here's a for instance. I couldn't get in my car because there are number plate recognition systems. Even if I wasn't using my phone, I couldn't take it with me because that's tracked by all sorts of apps. And worst of all, this is really terrible, I couldn't go to work.
Because of CCTV, I'm guessing?
Well, there's partly that, but I have a card, an entry card, to get into the office.
Rory, I hate to tell you, but I think you made a strategic error here. I think you should have done this project for a week, at least.
I hear what you say, but I'm very dedicated to my work.
Yeah, sure. What did you discover that was interesting about this?
Well, I think the point of the exercise was just how much data is being collected. We kind of know that, but we don't really think perhaps enough about who owns that data and whether we get anything in return for it.
What does this make you worry about?
We are all making this bargain all the time with companies and governments that give us goods and services in exchange for our data or refine those goods and services. So it's made me think about that. It's also made me think about a future where, you know, when I put my kettle on the hob at home, you know, if that kettle is connected to the internet, potentially somebody will know I'm home. I've already got in my home a smart thermostat, and in fact, that the company behind that is owned by Google. So Google is going to know an awful lot more about me as the years go by, and so are a lot of other people.
Rory Ketlin-Jones is technology correspondent for the BBC. Rory, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, I want to hear from you on this. Do you ever manage to become fully data-free these days, not accessing digital data, not generating it? I think my best bet is the last time I walked to swim in the ocean. Let me know the last time you were data-free. Tweet me, at The Brock Johnson. The Neverending Story is a great movie, but it's also an apt title for our coverage of net neutrality. We've talked a lot on this show about the Federal Communications Commission and how it might choose to try and either support delivery of information online at equal speeds or allow internet service providers, websites, and content creators to work out special so-called fast lane deals. Well, reportedly, the FCC is working on a new idea. It would closely regulate equal speed delivery from content creators like Netflix to ISPs like Verizon, for instance. But that won't impact the second step, which is much more important to consumers. The FCC might have a lighter touch when it comes to Verizon delivering the latest episode of House of Cards to you and me. The next FCC open meeting is on November 21st. Last month, we heard one of those stories that sounded like the plot of a thriller. The FBI admitted that back in 2007, it sent a link for a fake Associated Press news article to a kid on MySpace. When the 15-year-old clicked the link to the article, malware downloaded onto his computer that told the government his location and IP or internet protocol address. This wasn't some random kid, of course. He was the prime suspect in a number of bomb threats called into high schools. But in an age where paranoia about government-controlled media isn't unheard of, the case has raised the hackles of the Associated Press and raised questions about the FBI's methods. Joining us to talk a bit more about this is our friend and co-founder of Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society, Jonathan Zittrain. Jonathan, how are you?
All right, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. How easy would it have been for the FBI to pull this off?
It's not that difficult anymore for anybody to figure out how to get a message in front of someone else, maybe through, say, his MySpace page or Facebook if you don't have an email address. And if you can persuade the person to load the message or click on a link within it, you are much of the way to delivering a package of malware that can compromise the machine of the recipient.
Now, of course, in this case, the FBI was doing this in order to protect folks from a series of bomb threats. Did the FBI cross a line here by spoofing a news organization?
Well, I think you're right to contextualize it. The raw documents, those are available on the Electronic Frontier Foundation's website. And I should also say I'm on the board of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. But if you look at it, what you see is an office scrambling to deal with repeated bomb threats coming from electronic sources. So they look for permission and ultimately get a warrant to inject this malware if they can carefully target it to the MySpace account of the suspect. And they could have come up with any number of ruses, but they did choose to use a news story and in the style of and labeled as Associated Press. But the thing to realize here is, should we think of the provision of news as just another potential hat to wear for law enforcement? I think there's reason to be chary about that.
Where then should the government draw the line here?
It was, in fact, quite a while ago that the U.S. took the Peace Corps off limits for spying so as to maintain the integrity of the Peace Corps. And I think it's probably a good idea to imagine putting the production and consumption of media into that bucket. We shouldn't have the government producing false media, even with a warrant, in order to do what it's doing.
Jonathan Zittrain, our friend at Harvard. Jonathan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.